And so I could have vouched for you and used my social capital in that moment. I chose not to. I didn't know that it bothered you for all this time, which is weird. You should talk to someone about that.
I have to say it is weird. I agree with you. Hey there. If you've joined the podcast today, my name is Chris Jarvis. I work with companies on employee giving and volunteering programs.
And my name is Jake McIsaac. I spend a lot of time thinking about public safety and restorative justice.
So we are having conversations here that we've been having for 20 years.
Yeah. The only difference now is we press record and share it with you.
Thanks for joining us.
In this episode, we're talking about exclusion and social identity theory, and I promise it's not as boring as it sounds.
In fact, we'll throw in a pool party just to try and liven things up. But okay, so the pool party story is kind of sad for me.
Well, then we add in the little roller coaster ride that Senator Katie Britt had with the Republican Party, and we're off to the races.
That actually sounds pretty fun. So we're going to talk about belonging and being unbelonged and how it feels and why it happens.
Hey, Jake, did you catch the State of the Union address? I know in Canada, they do play a lot of American politics, so.
I actually did. I was watching to see if it would just be awful. Like, there were a whole bunch of things that led up to that in the moment. Like, I didn't know what to expect. Like,
right.
The street was closed off. They had protests. They weren't sure if they were going to be able to get the president even there. And then would people jeer and interrupt? And it was just,
would George Santos show up? He did. Would Marjorie Taylor Greene scream out and heckle again?
Yeah.
Like she's at a comedy club in New York at 2 a.m. and she's drank too much? She did. Yeah.
I watched it, but probably half hoping for the spectacle, right? Like,
yeah.
What was going to happen? And I,
yeah.
So yes, I did see it.
Reality TV show known as the Republic of the United States. Well,
that's it.
The State of the Union was pretty standard. I mean, for an 80,000-year-old gentleman, I think he gave a pretty decent speech.
Come on, let's not be ageist.
Okay, I'm sorry. For the oldest president that ever existed in the United States, I thought he did a decent job.
Yeah, I thought so too, actually.
Yeah?
I was surprised by it, though. I was surprised. There were a lot of folks going against him, right? Wanting him
in
to
the
fail.
Room?
Well, in the room, but like I tried to think about what you and I both do a lot of public speaking.
Right.
And rarely do you have to knowingly walk into a room.
An adversarial room?
That people hate you like that and then deliver a top 10.
Yeah, you're right.
So I thought he did quite well for that.
Yeah. I remember way back when in Halifax, we were volunteering and there were a bunch of us. It was you and Peter and David and you were all dating, I think, at the time. Do you remember?
We weren't dating each other, but
no.
Yeah.
But, there's anything wrong with that.
But
it was fine. 98 or 99. That would have been very progressive for back in the previous century. I remember being a big group. Like maybe we were down at that drop-in on Gottingen, and we were. Do you remember we had to get? We wanted, for our listeners, we had this building that was going to be a drop-in and we were renting it. We weren't even buying it. But out back, they had this huge area that could have been like this great deck, but it was neighbors and people had dumped trash in there for, I don't know, 1,000 years. And there was no way to get it out except to hoist it up a ladder and walk it out pail by pail into a truck and make, I forget, like 10? No, probably only 6 to 8 trips to the dump. With all of this stuff, it was just exhausting work.
But I think I know where you're going with this story. So let's get to the part because I know how this ends. So let's just rip the Band-Aid off.
It's just such a small little thing. I don't think we've ever talked about it before.
Yeah.
I think about it. You know, it's one of those thoughts that just comes through every once in a while, and I watch it going through on the thought street, and I'm like, oh yeah, there's that thought. It drives by here. It kind of takes a round around the block once every 3 months or whatever. And I'm like, oh yeah, that happened.
Once every 3 months.
About that, yeah. 3 or 4 times a year. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
For 20 years. Okay. So, yeah. So, but I don't know why. So what happened? Okay, everybody, what happened was I'm sitting there. We had had this long day. We achieved a lot together. We're like going to open this drop in. If it wasn't that, it was this joint project like this. Anyways, we had done a lot of stuff together and it was hot in Halifax, like what, 74, 75 degrees. That's hot for us out there. And now we were sitting there in the house and in my house. So I own a house. None of the rest of them did. And the reason I owned a house is because I have 4 kids. None of the rest of them did. And I was married. None of the rest of them were. And I was only about 10 some years older than everybody else. I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to do this. And they're like, hey, we should go. We're going to go to this place. And there was a pool and we're going to go. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to go. And then I don't know what it was. I can't actually remember what it was. And even if I did, I'm sure I would remember it wrong. But somehow I got, oh, not you, Chris. You're not invited. I was like, oh, okay. All right. I'm not invited. I felt like I was maybe the person kind of making some things happen and a leader and like on the team and then it's in a fun role, but not wanted.
I remember the story differently, but I remember it. And I don't think about it once every 3 months, but I have thought of it several times, actually.
I'm actually surprised you know what I'm talking about. So
I absolutely know what you're talking about because I felt a particular way that day. It is interesting you mentioned the age because I was about 3 years older than those other guys.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. And about 9.5 years younger than you.
Yeah, I'm in my early 30s. You're in your early 20s, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they must have been about 20.
Yeah.
And so I felt at that point like I was the older guy bumming around with this group. And it's important to note, they were already an established friend group.
Right, I wasn't. That's true. That's true.
They were
that's
an established true. Friend group that I had slowly infiltrated. And I was on the fringe of that already in group.
Okay.
And I also had a really great friend. This became for me a story I tell about social bridging and when I didn't do it very well. And I also thought that we were all going to the pool party as it was being talked about. And I didn't think of it as it was just a couple-y thing or if it was because you framed it up perfectly in the way you just told that story. You had a house and you had kids and you were married and we were kind of all dating other people. And it sounded like I read the initial conversations about it as we were sitting at your house, like after a long day of grinding it out at the drop-in, we were going to go hang out, have some laughs, splashed around in the pool.
Right.
Very much at the last minute became just us, just the younger ones. If the separator was, he's a little older. And I remember thinking, I was conflicted in that moment because that was the first moment that I was like, oh, there's now a divide here.
Yeah.
And I actually wanted to be more in that group. And it meant that I had to go with a group, go with a side. So I could have protested. But I did nothing.
Yeah.
I just let it. Yeah. Okay. I guess. Cause it wasn't my house. It wasn't my pool. I was tagging along. I was one of the couple.
What authority would you have to speak?
And you were
a new arrival.
I was a new arrival to that group. And I think that they saw you as my friend. So yeah. Yes, you were, yeah. And so I could have vouched for you and used my social capital in that moment. I chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
It, I didn't know that it bothered you for all this time, which is weird. You should talk to someone about that.
I have to say it's weird. I agree with you.
So you should, you know, more than that's a podcast co-host.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk like a professional.
So did you watch the rebuttal afterwards, the Republican rebuttal?
I didn't watch all of it, but I did hear about it. I heard parts of it, yeah.
I did not watch it. I know it always happens. They're pretty, it's like, I don't know. Everything you think you're going to hear, you're going to hear. But for this one, it was bizarre. And I sent you a clip. I was wondering if we could
play it. I've got it here in the chat. Let me queue it up here.
For our listeners, this is a TikTok creator, Casey. She goes by Mama Sissy Says. We'll put that link in there. And she's got a take on how the media responded that I think is really interesting. But we're just going to use her material here for easy reference.
Oh, look, the left and right wing media are finally agreeing on something, and it involves Katie Britt.
On Real America's Voice, the right wing hosts were stunned into silence.
May God bless you, and may God continue to bless these United States of America.
I can't. Oh, my God.
I'm sure she's a fan of her. I'm sure she's very nice. I don't want to get over the top here. But that is the everything about that on a night like tonight is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic because that's the appropriate response, right? Like most of us that were watching, this is how we reacted. But here's the problem with the mainstream.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was, what do you think? Like, if you haven't seen it, we should probably play a little bit more.
I am a proud wife and mom of two school-aged kids. I'm worried about their future and the future of children in every corner of our nation. President Biden just doesn't get it. To think about what the American dream can do across just one generation, in just one lifetime, it's truly breathtaking. I worry my own children may not even get a shot at living their American dreams. We know that President Biden didn't just create this border crisis. He invited it. We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it. Innocent Americans are dying, and you only have yourself to blame.
But she's wearing a green top. I don't know if it's a dress or a top or whatever. And she's in a kitchen that looks like it just sort of a little bit odd for some reason. It's not quite right. And she's sitting there and she's doing what you and I would call leaning in, which is really emphasizing every word possible. Now, you know, she's the youngest senator in the Senate, which may not be saying much because she's 40.
Alabama, right?
She's from Alabama. She's got a very short career in politics, considered a rising star. And so she was given the honor of doing this, but it was Stepford Wives, man.
Her husband's former NFL player. I mean, I don't know that she's got, and she was a former beauty queen or I'm not even sure, pageant contestant winner, whatever the right way to say that is, you know, by some objective measure of some standardized objective measure of beauty, she won. Okay.
Good. Okay. Yep.
Fine. And so it's so deeply reeks of privilege and just like how and why should we listen to you? I get that you got elected, but if we go downriver a bit, we should just be like, how did you get elected?
I know, right? So this is the odd thing, and I don't think she's generally speaking, she's not come off. Nobody, most of us hadn't heard of her. This is her debut. And her handlers, her coaches, somebody, she got bad advice from somebody. And she, you know, she's got a background that's kind of similar to us, I think, in terms of being growing up in religion and hearing sermons every weekend.
Right.
And so there's a sort of a template that she's following here.
It is a bit weird, right? That part's weird. Because you do hear that we're not usually around other than when, you know, kids go to school, or you might get a prof who really nails it in terms of orators. It's something that's a bit lost right now. And so once in a while, if for a niche group of religious folks across various groups, tend to get together once or twice a week and listen to someone opine in ways that have to be engaging. They use all of the tricks, the what you call the leaning in, slowing down the pace.
Mm-hmm. Breathy.
Breathy, yeah. For emphasis.
Yeah. All those oration tricks work. And when they're done well, Barack Obama does a good job with them. They're excellent. But I think our system one, which is our 95% observing part of the brain that is preconscious, took a lot of cues from the way she was talking that said, something's wrong. This seems disingenuous. I feel a little bit maneuvered. It's interesting that there's an evolutionary piece in us that stands up and goes, wait, nope, that's wrong. And it's just the subtleties. It's so amazing. So obviously she comes off poorly. Don't know why. There's some reason for it.
Cringy.
That's a better word. That's a way better word. But the content is not, it's flowery. It's over the top poetic. The imagery is like steeped in the blood of revolutionary patriots overcoming the greatest empire in the world. And we eat their bones for cereal. She didn't say that part. But the other part she did say, to have then the reaction, immediate reaction there with those TV hosts from an ultra right wing, you could even posit somewhat Christian nationalist station. The voice, I think it's not ONN. It's the
MSNBC or something. No,
that's who's airing it about them. But this is the Real America's Voice.
Oh yeah, okay.
And Studio 6B. I don't know what that network does, but anyways. So their reaction, not even trying to, and this is a group of individuals who've had to do a lot of, what do you call that when you step in and repair someone's image for Trump? I mean, this Republicans, all politicians and news media people have got to be somewhat good at this. But I mean, Trump, they should be experts at it, but they couldn't even remedy this. So here's an individual who represents us, say the words that represent us. And as soon as she finishes, they're like, we should burn her. She's a witch. I think the turnaround is just amazing, even within our own group.
Well, let me see if I can find another clip. What about starting here?
I saw headlines that were critical of Biden, but none that were critical of Katie Britt. It wasn't until the following morning when I started seeing headlines like this. Official GOP response to State of the Union rebuttal. Has Republicans losing it? When motherhood is a weapon? What the hell am I watching? And the reason that high-level Republicans were responding this way is because that's how the American public was responding, and they knew that. The temperature was, Katie Britt seems like a Stepford wife. Serena Joy vibes? All the things that have been in my comments section was the prevalent view of American public after seeing that message. They're like, this is a Saturday Night Live skit. This is parody, right? This can't be real. In fact, it took a response from a journalist named Jonathan Katz to post a TikTok video calling Katie Britt out for lying about a 20-year-old SA story involving the border policy that she mentioned in her speech, which is patently wrong and full of lies. And then suddenly we saw a dramatic shift in the type of media that was coming out regarding Katie's speech. Now, not only are they critical of the speech and saying that it was completely out of touch and there was a lot of overacting and overcoaching, now they're pointing out the lies that were told in the speech, fundamentally undoing whatever legitimacy was there to begin with.
It's interesting, the point she's making is there was this sort of preset response praising her, then a number of people said, what's going on? And then somebody said there were some errors, and that felt like the crack in the dam. Then everybody poured in and just started going to town. But it was only because the base rejected her. That's the only reason that the media reflected the base. And that's the whole point of the clip that Casey's doing there.
What I didn't realize, and I don't know the backstory of it, if it is true, looks like someone went digging into something that she said about a sexual assault. And
yes.
I conflicted on that one, right? Because
it's a documented assault.
Awful thing to lie about. Awful thing.
Absolutely.
Right? But who the hell is this other person to dig into a story that they are also only going to have partial pieces of information about?
No, that's it. It is documented. Who, when, and where?
Okay.
She just took that story and appropriated it with a different place at the border, different woman, different year. Like she just
It wasn't her story.
No.
Okay. So she's changed. Okay. Got it.
And that's why they're saying this is an obvious lie. It's as heinous as you would think to take somebody who experienced that and using it as a prop.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So the ire, the outrage, the umbrage, whatever word you want to land on is it's real and it's stirring, and the swell of her own party turns. Like when you think about a two-party system, it is easy to break into in and out groups in some
simplest thing in the world. Yeah.
The easiest way.
Yep.
So all of a sudden she is sliding toward the out of her group.
Yeah. And so what's really, again, going back to what I said before, you would think that Trump had preconditioned everybody to tolerate almost any kind of incongruity. So this is the problem. Right. There's an incongruity with how we perceive ourselves and how you acted. And all I can figure out is that her mannerism did not fit the idealization of the current Republican Party with Jesus not on a cross, but with a gun. You can go from being iconically, and this is from social identity theory, the prototypical leader of our group, and we will give you our power to speak on our behalf. And you can walk in any room with us and say, I represent yada, yada, and you will listen. And yeah, actually, I will, because when you're not in that role, I don't have to listen. But if you represent all those people, but just the smallest thing, you know, basically from Katie's perspective, they withdraw the power and she's left there with nothing. Like that is a really, we talk about the pain of exclusion as opposed to the way we feel when we get to belong and be included and we can bring our value to a group. There is this physical pain that happens when we're excluded, but that exclusion can happen so fast to anybody, anywhere, and you may not even know that you're crossing some sort of line that the group has. Because she didn't. She wouldn't have done that if she had known that this would happen, right? The backlash.
Yeah. I mean, had it gone well, they'd be celebrating her. But it was easy to exploit some of those things that would make parts of that political ideology more palpable to, you know, the general. Because it is coming up to an election. So you actually have to try and get people to listen who wouldn't ordinarily listen. You're not speaking only to your base. You're trying to increase the base. And so you have to at least soften, seem younger. Like, I wonder if all of the things that were constructed in that were meant to say to Democrats and independents, lean in.
Yeah.
If they were paying attention, they'd say, hey, it's not going to be a guy that looks like Chris Jarvis going to deliver this. What do we need?
Yeah.
Young. Terms of gender, maybe female, helps if mother, Midwest or at least Southern, kind of these kind of overlapping family base. Are they looking for those? Was that the hope, do you think?
Absolutely. 100%. Everything you just said, I agree with that.
Then it failed.
It's obvious. Yeah. And it failed because why?
Because they were going to exploit her. They're exploiting all of those things.
I know, but they exploit all those. This is politics. That's the nature of the game, is exploitation and fabrication. But she in her mannerisms crossed an invisible, unspoken, we would call it intrinsic knowledge, yeah, versus explicit knowledge. Everybody in this group, we don't say it out loud all the time, and she crossed it unknowingly and was outed. And so you can go from, I'm not only in the group, I am a prototypical leader of the group. They have given me all of their power by assent, by just saying you speak on a behalf. And then I do one thing, and the next thing I turn around and they're gone. And in fact, they're on the other side of the fence pointing the finger going, oh, you're not only not the prototypical leader, you're not us now to some degree, right? So I don't think they've rejected her from the Republican Party and nobody's going to her house with pitchforks. But there is now, she is going to suffer some unspoken, unformalized remedial action, I think. There's going to be... she's going to have to make it right somehow. I don't know what that is.
It could be interesting because the Republican Party, with their candidate, has a history of taking some of those folks who are on the extremes who appear to be ostracized and pushed to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly say, no, just with a blessing of the actual leader, say, now you're back in.
Mm-hmm. That's a weird dynamic.
So she could come back from it.
She could. Yep.
If Trump says, no, I loved it. That was right.
Yep. Everybody would change their mind and their tune. Oh, you know what? He's right. I hadn't really considered this perspective, and I think we need to be a bit more. But here's the thing. The line that is there for her, it's a different line for Trump, but there is a line where they would turn on him. I was watching Napoleon, which is a six-hour movie, it seems. And yet it left out most of the history because they really wanted to focus in on this dynamic between him and Josephine. It's very, it's a great story, visually stunning. It is worth it. I mean, it's no Dune 2, but it's amazing, right?
There's the plug.
Yeah. And in it, you can see this guy going from nothing, a Corsican, lieutenant, all the way up to emperor, with the French who have just beheaded everybody who had any nobility to their name. Now they're the Republic. Oh, screw the Republic. We'll be an empire. Give it all back to him. He has a huge number of successes. One not success. He's out of there. Comes back out of there again. I mean, just the ability, and probably France is stereotypically well known for being sort of whimsical with leaders, but it is amazing to see how much power leaders wield and how quickly that power can be taken away. It's just an illusion. They only have it because we all give it to them. And you can be on the outs.
I did remember that leaving and thinking about that a lot that night after the event. Thinking that I was part of an exclusionary moment and it felt really shitty in the moment. And even when I think back of it, I'm like, what was I afraid of? I want all the people in my life who I really love and cherish to get along. And I want them to see each other. And I want to just connect. And I have overwhelming anxiety when that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like I cannot bring friend groups together because what if they don't see that this is a great person? Mm-hmm. Like what are they about to tell me about my friend that I don't see? Or am I like, he's all right. I'm like, what? So I'm never going to bring the friend groups together. I'm just never going to. My biggest fear.
Your reason for not bringing friend groups together is you do not want to have to face the reality of their less than qualities.
That are apparent to other people. Why can't I just be the glue to make this better? Why can't they believe in me and say, well, if you like them, I love them?
Well, why can't I actually agree with that. If you said you love somebody, I would start with, I guess I love you too then.
Right.
That's between you and me.
But that doesn't go everywhere. And so I have another just slightly similar, but I have a smaller group of friends that there's about five or six. We've been hanging out and kind of connecting here for years in Halifax. And one of those guys had stopped inviting that group of five or six of us together when he has other groups of people over. He'll have a housewarming and we're no longer invited. And we're like, oh, dude, we're like your closest friends. Like we're stood in your wedding. Like we're the, yeah, but you guys do this weird thing when I have other friends over, friends from work, friends in my neighborhood. Oh, you all wow. just sit in the kitchen or you sit on the couch and you don't mingle. And so it makes me yeah. really, really uncomfortable that you don't want to meet my other friends. So to avoid that, he stopped inviting his closest friends. Now, he may hear this and be like, oh, I should tell him. So there's that. Fair enough.
Bob, you know who you are.
You know who it is. Social bridging. So it's weird to me that after all these years, we have kind of become, in our professional lives, people who are known as collectors of humans and stories and really yeah. cool people. And you do this to me all the time. Oh, I met a really great guy. We are going to get on a call and we're going to talk to that person.
Yeah.
Like you don't just want to be a collector. You want to be a connector between mm-hmm. like that, those relationships. And you tell me you have got to meet this mm-hmm. person. So in the background, you already know. I wish I did that better back then, because not doing it 20 plus years later, I realized that does have an impact.
Well, and in your defense to the entire audience, the global audience, you were 22 or 23. Right. So, I mean, in terms of your competencies, by comparison, you were pretty shit. But you were amazingly natural at it. Which is why you and I got along. There's sort of I came into the world with a set, I can't take any credit for it. It's just the way I got born. And mm-hmm. and you've used those very... very well. And now I think this many years later, you've honed it into enough of almost a craft that is one of the reasons I enjoy talking to you, is because your way of connecting to people and interpreting actions and seeing things and sense making is, I want to be more like that. So I think you ironically have gone from a point where you might be embarrassed about it because you knew you didn't do it, which is amazing, because I wouldn't have thought I didn't do something back then, all the way to today, where it's the thing that you're better at than most things that I know of.
Thank you for saying that. The other thing that I, knowing myself back then, I think I would have responded differently if you had reacted, but you didn't.
I was trying to be cool. Like,
yeah you did it. I got stuff to do.
It's so funny. 30 something felt like, well, this is it. Get ready to die. Now it seems that's the most ridiculous thing. My kids are all in their 30s, pretty much. I probably just pulled back and just felt a little like, yep, yeah, no, I see the differentiator. Old guy, people with their whole life ahead of them. That's a differentiator. And I could go from prototypical leader, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to make this happen. Yeah. Everybody rally around to, yeah, but you're not invited to the pool party. And right. it's a weird human dynamic that we have.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was meant to be malicious.
No, of course
I think
not.
There was a moment where they decided, and I will say we in there, more passively, I kind of went along with it. It was like, that part of the day is done.
Yeah.
And now it's going to this event or this part
exactly.
of the day.
Exactly.
Instead of the, let's have a great day together as a community. Let's have a great day together as a group of folks who did this thing and we'll have fun together. And I think at that point, there was very much a break in their understanding of this was work and this was fun. And yep. you were really fun at work. You're a really fun boss, a really fun leader. I don't think they were seeing you in that same way as I was seeing you as, oh, this is my friend.
I actually never engaged with anybody in that room unless we were doing something voluntary together or something community, something together. You're right. That's right.
So, I mean, I just think it was maybe the way the relationships were structured, and we started, and go back to the earlier versions of the earlier episodes of the podcast to hear how we kind of met and started hanging out. But our early connections was about, let's do something, let's be something different, let's be transformative. And so it did feel a very constructed separation in that, because of course, I, of course you would come to the pool party if it was my pool and it was my decision. But going with it meant I had to leave you behind. But we had a great time without you. So
you missed a great time.
It was a fantastic. That's
good to know. I never asked about it. I don't know. So, but what's really interesting to me, this story and Katie's story, the U.S. Senator, is that the stories that we share amongst ourselves, the small little conversations, the way we bring, and we talk about this a lot. This season has been the inward journey is the necessary step to see our outward, the life in the real world grow and expand, right? We have to go in to grow outwardly. And part of that is sort of coming to terms with how you view yourself, your identity, but also the identity that we create in partnership with the people around us. So I was creating, I thought, a version of an identity with the group. And as you rightly explained, it was like, it didn't, still couldn't cross over the threshold of old and young. And one of the reasons was there was a lack of narrative around, not only is he a fun like team leader or project guy, but there's this friend way of seeing him as well. They didn't have that part of the story. That wasn't being repeated in the group. And so when it came to make sense of that moment, it was like, well, he's this for the first part of the day, but he's not that for the second part of the day. You straddle both worlds and can see it, but you can't. Interestingly, if there were four of you and one of the others, it would have shifted.
Right.
It's still evolutionary. You're in that place where more voices matter. They determine a nation's course by voting, for example. So that's pretty ingrained. And there was just one of you and you couldn't turn the room. And so you didn't speak to it. But then you look at Katie. This is the weird, and I don't know what the takeaway from all of this is, but rising star, she's there, she speaks, and all of a sudden people see her in the green, which is what you wore on Handmaid's Tale when you were part of Gideon. She sounds like one of the key characters from that show. Unfortunately, the way she's talking, her mannerisms, it's creepy. Yeah. She didn't attend it. She's being told this by handlers. And then she's done and she hangs up and everybody says, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. You're out. And she's like, but I'm not, why don't I get to go to the pool party? I don't understand how this shift happened because I was this and now I'm not that. And so our identity is not just who we want to be on the inside and what the story we're telling ourselves. It's also the story that's out there that I hold with 1,000 people who hold it. And if this identity remains true, if I don't do anything to violate it, they will lend me their power in a way. They'll lend me their voice. In my role, I do feel like I have some relationships and I can, when I talk, people kind of know there's a number of people behind him who say, yeah, we're kind of in on it. But that can go away in a second because we co-create that identity together. Does that make I don't know if I'm saying what I think I'm saying.
We've been trying to do that a lot this year in our residence communities at the university I work at. We've been intentionally trying to, when you talk about co-creation, create the kind of living and learning community that people want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because you want it, we're going to do it. It's how do you do that together then? So we hear about all of the wants and needs that we have and see how many of those, not institution to learner, but learner to learner, that can you co-create. The institution, the resident system can be a foil for that, but you have to do the work because it's 100% relational. And so one of the critiques that we often have heard in years gone by is when students are leaving doing their exit interviews, saying, how was your year in residence? They will tell a story about connecting and caring. It felt like no one cared. And if we did a sociogram of how many meetings did you go to, how many new people did you meet, who did you know when you came, and if you haven't raised, and we haven't done the work of creating the conditions for you to meet other people and sort of be the glue and be the connector and the convener of those conversations, then you will leave with a narrative that no one cared. And what did you do on a Saturday night? I sat in my room. I listened to everyone else laughing and partying in the hallways. Mm-hmm. I I waited to be invited to the party, but no one invited me because they didn't even know I was there.
Right.
It's devastating. And I see that now, I think, a little bit more up close in the stories when students say, yeah, this year it wasn't it for me. All the great programming, all the great supports, all the structures you put in place to support me when I needed help. I didn't know my neighbor. I didn't feel connected to the person right next to me. I didn't get to know any new stories. I didn't meet anyone in my program. And so I had a terrible first year. Despite all of the hard work that the institution pays the professional staff, it really breaks down on exactly their version of the pool parties. Yeah. Who didn't get invited? Who didn't notice that they were? Who didn't speak up when we had an opportunity to call people in? We just said, like for me, you're right. I did have an opportunity to say, and I was outnumbered. I could have said, hey, that's my buddy. And then you and I would have been at a pool party by ourselves.
Yeah, that's right. That's not the point. Like, Jake, if you like it so much. Yeah. Exactly. And your girlfriend would not have liked that at the time, for sure.
Well, she thought you were fine.
She shouldn't have. I was a real dork back then, everybody. I just want to publicly say it in case anybody from back then's listening. Yeah, you're right. I agree with you. I was a bit of a dork. Okay, so my takeaway from this is there's a role that some of us can play as includers, but it's not always possible. Like the way the system is structured, it may not be possible in some situations. Secondly, people can feel excluded and you'll have no idea they're feeling excluded. So, I don't know what to do with that. But then thirdly, getting excluded may be the result of following all the recommendations of your group. You do everything that your group said to do, like poor Katie, and then nope, you're out. Like, do it exactly like this. And then you do it and they look around. Yeah, nobody liked that. So you're out. And she's not out. I'm not saying she didn't lose her job. She's not Santos, but it is not obvious why belonging and exclusion happen or work. I think.
Can I add one piece of maturity that I would, if I could give my earlier self this piece of advice,
yeah, okay,
that I try to follow now, is in that moment I knew something was wrong, but I wouldn't have articulated it the same way. But my gut told me in that moment, this doesn't feel very good.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything with that. And I thought about that as a moment in time. So as soon as we get to the pool party and you don't react, I can then let myself off the hook about that moment.
Right.
And I think now what I've come to do is trust my gut enough that something's wrong, even if I can't think about it, and I might not be brave enough to do it in the moment still, that doesn't release me of the responsibility to do something with it. So now what I would do is circle back and try to
look
in.
And now I would
and say, Chris, can we talk about that? Can we talk about last week? That left me feeling weird, and it might just be in my head, but I wanted to just check in with you to say it felt like exclusionary in that moment, and I didn't know what to do. So I would probably be honest, and I didn't know if you were feeling it, and I was trying to read for you, and you didn't do it. So if I'm way off, just tell me I'm way off, and you might do that. Mm-hmm. But I have a sense that you would have appreciated it wouldn't mean 20 years of walking around with it if I got to that earlier, even if it was only a week later.
What do you think? Okay, so what would be different in my life if we had just done that then? Because honestly, I can't tell you what effect it's had to have that as part of my story as well. Was that enough of a moment that I have a part that's trying to resolve it? Like, I didn't like how it ended. So internal family systems therapy, and we're not going to get into this. In certain moments of our life, when our brain is more plastic, we may configure a set of neural net configuration whereby we could make sense of the moment in the moment enough that we don't have this pain of cognitive dissonance in our mind. But every time something similar shows up, it's like all the actors are like, oh, it's our scene. Everybody, ever places.
Okay. Places, here we go. Yeah,
this time Jake is going to be played by a guy named Gary. I don't really know who he is, but Jessica is, and everybody, new people all get the roles and action. And then I go into role. There's no pool party. I'm not 32. We're not in Halifax, but my brain is still there. And it's like, we get a do-over. And it is desperate for a do-over. So I wonder if I've been having, because we haven't had this conversation, I've been doing do-overs for the past 25. It's 25 years.
It's going to be 25. I wonder if you're just getting to it first now. Like when you feel it coming, if you create there before you're going to get left behind. I got something else planned. You guys have a good time? I think that's you. I think I heard that. I know that you get there
faster like now. Hey, I know what's going to happen. Here we go. Bye.
Yeah. You get there faster now by just being like, oh, and the rest we could be like, oh, I was just about to invite him, but he uninvited himself.
Yes, he does.
I wonder how many missed opportunities.
And one of those missed opportunities was an investor who wanted to put $10 million into the business, and we would have this huge business, and people around the world would be doing transformative approaches and having these epiphanies and changing their life. Jacob, because as a 21-year-old, you were too afraid.
The butterfly effect of me not being brave enough in that moment to take action or being too fearful. Okay, so yeah. I guess you have to put my stuff out there at the end. That's fair. It's bullish of you, but go ahead.
Well, to be fair, and I think our audience would understand. This is mostly about what. Yeah, I think our first episode is "What the Hell's Wrong with Chris Jarvis?" Right, like that. Like that's sure. The podcast title.
Yeah,
fair. Episode one. Okay, yeah. What the hell's wrong with Chris? Great. There's my public identity, which I hold with thousands of people all around the world. And I can kind of draw power from that with that public identity. Okay. If I'm in the right kind of role and whatnot, there's the personal identity that, you know, significant others know, family know, stuff I don't necessarily want the public to know. It would destroy my public persona.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then there's my private persona, which I don't even want to see myself, but I know is there. And that's where a lot of internal family systems therapy and work needs it. That stuff down there that I don't really share with anybody. And if I do, it's probably modified more than I'm willing to even admit. But public, personal, private. And we have this role of the in-between people like you, the prototypical person like me who can kind of be empowered but also can be disempowered quite quickly. Then we have the group that in this stage of human evolution has all the power, but is usually too dumb to use it very well. We have a collective dumbness that's because of our biases. But those three positions in are constantly active in inclusion and exclusion activity. That I guess that's kind of one of the things that came to my mind as we were talking.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that what makes it scary sometimes is just using your alliteration with all those P's. There's a proximity problem. Is that nice. those people? See what I did there? Those people that are in that personal space that abuts right up next to private. There is some kind of leakage, and that can be devastating because in those moments that your private starts to come out in the wrong settings, it could be tired or frustration or overly emotive. It could be activated, whatever the case may be.
Yep.
The private version of who we are risks causing havoc, and we might lose the personal. We might lose those relationships closest to us because the ugly chaos might seep out. Yeah. And so, you know, we hold tight instead of dealing with it, just try to build those better containers to keep it in so that, but I, you know, I think we're trying to be brave and look into those spaces and both publicly and privately.
And honestly, one of the biggest problem for me is, and this is a whole nother podcast, is I have put enough fail safes in place that I blind myself from seeing my private parts. which that entire sentence needs to be corrected. No, we need to correct that.
Leave it in.
No, in post, but please, please, please don't leave that. I don't trust our podcast people in Halifax.
We do.
They're going to leave it in. They're always throwing me.
I trust Connor to do exactly that, to leave it in. So
thanks, Connor.
No, thank
all right.
You,
we can we, let's pick it. Let's in one of the last few episodes of this season, we will address how we deal with this public, personal, private personas.
All right.
Thanks, Jake.
Okay.
All right. See you.